Here's Julian Joseph with Jazz Lineup.
Hello. On today's show, as part of the BBC's World War I centenary season, broadcaster Bob Sinfield investigates what jazz the Great War generation may have been listening to and what, if any, jazz was on their gramophones. Also on the programme, I'm joined by Kevin Legendre for this month's Now's the Time, where Kevin unearths a recent classic worth a reappraisal. Hi, Kevin. What have you picked for us this month?
I've picked one of the great concept albums in jazz, also one of the great epic works in jazz, a large-scale piece. It was recorded in 1997 by Wynton Marsalis and the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra, and it sounds a bit like this.
And more from Kevin and that album by Wynton Marsalis later on the show. First up, vocalist Barb Younger covers a select set from the pen of Robert Zimmerman, better known as Bob Dylan. Yes, the famed singer of chansons has turned her voice to the music of Leonard Cohen and Bob Dylan on her new album. This is It's All Right, Ma, I'm Only Bleeding.
Of noon, shadows, even the silver spoon, the handmade blade, the child's balloon, eclipses both the sun and moon to understand, you know, too soon, there is no sense in trying. Pointed threats they bluff with scorn, suicide remarks are torn from the fool's gold mouthpiece, the hollow horn, place wasted words prove to warn that he not busy being born is busy dying. Page flies out the door, you follow, find yourself at war. Watch waterfalls of pity roar, you feel to moan, but unlike before, you discover that you'd just be one more person crying. So don't fear if you hear the foreign sound to your ear. It's all some downfall, private reasons, great or small, can be seen in the eyes of those that call to make all that should be killed to crawl, while others say don't hate nothing at all except hatred. Disillusioned words like bullets bark as human gods aim for their mark, make everything from toy guns that spark to flesh-colored Christ that glow in the dark. It's easy to see without looking too far that not much is really sacred. While preachers preach of evil fates, teachers teach that knowledge waits can lead to $100 plates. Goodness hides behind its gates, but even the President of the United States must sometimes have to stand naked. And though the rules of the road have been lodged, it's only people's games that you've got to dodge. Signs that con you into thinking you're the one that can do what's never been done, that can win what's never been won. Meantime, life outside goes on all around you. You lose yourself, you reappear, you suddenly find you got nothing to fear. Alone you stand without nobody near, when a trembling distant voice unclear startles your sleeping ears to hear that somebody thinks they really found you. In your nerves is lit, yet you know there is no answer fit to satisfy, ensure you're not to quit, to keep it in your mind and not forget that it is not he or she or them or it that you belong to. their destinies, speak jealously of them that are free, do what they do just to be nothing more than something they invest in. While some on principles baptized to strict party platform ties, social clubs in drag disguise, outsiders they can freely criticize, tell nothing except who to idolize, and then say, God bless him. While one who sings with his tongue on fire gargles in the rat race choir, bent out of shape from society's pliers, cares not to come up any higher, but rather get you down in the hole that he's in. But I mean no harm, nor put fault on anyone that lives in a vault. Watch people in pairs, limited in sex, they dare to push fake morals, insult and stare. While money doesn't talk, it swears. Obscenity, who really cares? Propaganda, all is phony. While them that defend what they cannot see with a killer's pride, security, it blows the mind most bitterly for them that think death's honesty won't fall upon them naturally. Life sometimes must get lonely. My eyes collide head on with stuffed graveyards, false gods I scuff, a pettiness which plays so rough, walk upside down inside handcuffs, kick my legs to crash it off, say okay I've had enough, what more can you show me? And if my
Dylan's It's All Right Ma, I'm Only Bleeding, given the Barb Younger treatment on her new album Hard Rain, which is out now on the Crystalline Records label. And you can catch Barb in London on the 6th of July at the Crazy Cox with very special guest Julian Cleary. On the 7th of July, she sings the Nina Simone Songbook Series at the Pizza Express Jazz Club in Soho. Then over the pond to the USA, where from the 19th to the 31st of July, she sings Bob Dylan at the O'Neill Cabaret Conference in the Eugene O'Neill Memorial Theatre Centre in Connecticut. And if you're looking for some jazz action on these shores, you'll be glad to know this year's Manchester Jazz Festival runs from the 18th to the 27th of July. And since the festival started in 1995, it's always showcased local and national talent with a smattering of international names. Each year, it goes from strength to strength. And in 2014 boasts the inclusion of Soft Machine Legacy, The Bad Plus, and Lonnie Liston Smith. Plenty of rising stars in the ranks with the Torrey Freestone Trio, Dorian Ford Quartet, Jonathan Silk Big Band, and the Mancunian Arun Ghosh. He appears with his sextet. He's a firm favourite. For more information, check out the Jazz Lineup page via the BBC Radio 3 website. Danish guitarist Christian Boring came to Britain to study at the Guildhall School in London a few years ago, and he's now a regular fixture on the London music scene. His latest release features great British stalwarts Arthur Lee on piano and Jim Hart on the vibraphone. He presents a good set of well-played compositions with a band exercising a strong sense of control and empathy, and this is Equilibrium. The gentle sophistication of guitarist Christian Boring and Equilibrium. Mick Cody and John Scott complete the rhythm section on bass and drums. The album is called Urban Novel and is out on the Jelly Mold Jazz label. And Christian plays in London with singer Monica Lidke at her album launch at the Pizza Express on July the 2nd. He's also with the Bruno Heinen Quartet at Ronnie Scott's on July the 15th. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Julian Joseph, on FM, online and on digital radio. As part of Radio 3's two-week season, Music in the Great War, telling the story of World War I through its music, we at Jazz Lineup were curious as to what kind of music the Great War generation would have been listening to, and what jazz in particular may have been on their gramophones. So we sent our roving reporter, Bob Sinfield, back in time to find out, and he'll be with me after this Chris Barber arrangement of the 1914 Cataract Rag. Trombonist Chris Barber and Cataract Rag, a piece from 1914. And it's my pleasure to welcome our investigator and jazz aficionado, Bob Sinfield. Welcome, Bob.
Very good to be back.
So, Bob, would the Cataract Rag have been a turntable hit 100 years ago?
Almost certainly, as ragtime was very much at the forefront then. The version we heard was actually from 1953. That was the Ken Collier Jazzmen interpretation with Chris Barber and Monty Sunshine, and curiously enough on banjo, Lonnie Donegan, who was only a few years away from being at the forefront of skiffle.
How about that?
But ragtime really was well embedded in the popular consciousness by the start of the First War in the summer of 14. It had been around really for the best part of 20 years and continued to be popular throughout the war. It only really fell off at the start of the 1920s. And there were a lot more people involved in the creation of it than the ubiquitous Mr. Joplin, not taking anything away from him. But we had composers like Arthur Marshall and Joseph Lamb. Those names pop up again and again. Less so Robert Hampton, who wrote The Cataract Rag. As far as I know, he wasn't related in any way to Lionel Hampton, but he certainly sowed the seeds, I think, of a jazz sound there.
So what is the major difference in terms of the transition from ragtime into jazz, or the birth of jazz with relation to ragtime?
I think the formality of ragtime is the crucial difference, because there's something stylistically very reminiscent of what we now know as jazz. But there wasn't the stepping off the edge of a cliff quality that came later.
Because it was all written out, wasn't it?
Yes. And, well, we'll come to Joplin later, but he was very insistent that it was a serious music form. But a lot of people decried it because, well, as you know, whenever anything new comes along, the establishment decries it. But a lot of people were listening, of course, on gramophones, as you said, because this was the cutting-edge wireless technology of its day, and people were able to take these machines into the trenches for their rare moments of entertainment. They'd be listening on an Apollo set or a Decca machine, and the records would arrive in these great boxes with a spike protruding from the bottom, and the 78s would be stacked on the spike, and then there'd be a little trench in the box for the needles, because you needed to change the needle just about every third play.
It's a very different culture from what we're used to these days. We just spoke a little bit about the military there and the time in between, but where did the marching bands come in?
Well, the marching bands, much to the consternation of commanding officers, could occasionally break out into something a little less formal than the standard marches. The top brass didn't like this very much, because according to them it was bad for discipline. I don't think there's any proof on that one either way, but what I would say is it was probably very good for morale. And it only really needed one maverick figure to turn things around. I mean, it's a similar situation to the squadroneers in World War II. But in World War I, you had a man who rejoiced in the name of James Rees Europe. When he was in his regiment, he managed to use the musical talent at his disposal to astound audiences. And these weren't audiences who were paying to see them, but these were, for example, people who would turn out when the regiment visited Brittany. And the first thing you do, the protocol is you play the national anthem. So he's there playing the Marseillaise. But the locals, their jaws are dropping, and they don't even, 8 or 10 bars go by before they even recognise the Marseillaise, because he's doing it with a swing.
Right.
And then he launches into numbers like the Memphis Blues by W.C. Handy, which had only come out a few years before. So I think we can credit Mr. Europe, Lieutenant Europe, I should say, with quite a bit of spreading of the word of jazz in Europe itself. So it's an apt name.
Yeah, it's interesting to think of the complexion of jazz around that time in the teens of the 20th century. And characters like James Rees Europe and W.C. Handy are sort of at the forefront of this new sound.
Yes.
Well, what about the influence of music hall songs?
Music hall was still very much on the scene. It was where people went for a good night out and a good sing-song. So, again, this was something very much a part of popular culture still. And it was being used, and one could say exploited, by the military establishment as a recruitment tool. If you've seen Oh, What a Lovely War, you'll know that they pretty much got it right, that what was going on was that people would go to the music hall for a good night out. And then this chorus would come on and they'd sing, "Oh, we don't want to lose you, but we think you ought to go." Mm-hmm. And these girls would be parading the aisles, signing people up and virtually sort of blackmailing people into saying, "Come on, are you a coward or what?" Mm. And they go, "Well, I'm not a coward." And they'd say, "Well, come on then, sign up." And there'd be a recruiting sergeant backstage. But there were some numbers that were purely there for froth. Mm. And one of these was called Hitchy Coo. And it was recorded in 1912 by a man calling himself Ragtime Joe. Mm-hmm. It was lost for a number of years and rediscovered and used by a British singer called Victoria Hart mm-hmm. on her album The Lost Gershwin in 2008. And she's accompanied here by an all-female string quartet called Pavow. Mm-hmm. And this number has a title which I think still rings true today. It's called "When You Want 'Em, You Can't Get 'Em."
Victoria Hart and her take on Gershwin's "When You Want 'Em, You Can't Get 'Em" from the album The Lost Gershwin. Now, Bob, where's the most famous names of early jazz in all of this?
W.C. Handy, as I mentioned, had a big hit with the Memphis Blues in 1912, but then the biggie, St. Louis Blues, came along in 1914. Mm-hmm. And I would argue that it was probably the best-known tune in jazz up to the time when Paul Desmond wrote Take Five.
Yes, absolutely.
So a good time for him in that sense. Now, Jelly Roll Morton famously was billed as the originator of jazz. And of course, that's kind of hard to disprove because along with King Oliver and Ma Rainey, people who were going to be big stars in the 20s, mm-hmm. they didn't record in the teens. So we don't know what Jelly Roll sounded like. We don't know what any of them sounded like at that time. One thing in Morton's favour in terms of this argument that he was the creator of jazz is the fact that although it wasn't published and copyrighted until years later, apparently King Porter Stomp was written as early as 1902. Now, if that really is the case, that's tremendously avant-garde, isn't it?
I think a lot of these artists, the recording part wasn't so important then, was it? Because it was still a very new technology. It was still something that nobody really knew what was going to happen. And every legitimization of any kind of music all was in the writing down of it. It all had to be on manuscript. So the culture at the time, which is very revealing in a way as to how progressive this music actually is, was not a recorded culture.
That's right.
So it's a fascinating thing to think about, to imagine. But certainly I think when Jelly Roll Morton comes along later with his classic bands in 23, the Red Hot Peppers, then we can hear the complexity that he's dealing with. His music exists on a completely different level from everybody's around, really.
That's right.
So, like you said, it's very hard to disprove whether his claims as the inventor of jazz or not is true or not. Well, so far, we've heard some of the stars that have paved the way for the coming of the jazz age. But was there a fully formed jazz ensemble at work during the war years?
There was. And these boys stole a march, really, on the artists that we've just been talking about. Five young men from New Orleans, calling themselves the original Dixieland Jazz Band, whom we could, for ease of purpose, acronym as Odd Job. I know there isn't a second O there, but, you know, go with me on this. And they did have enormous success in New York and Chicago. And they released records throughout the later years of the war. We're going to hear one of them in just a moment. I'm just looking at the CD collection here. Yeah, it started around 1917 with the Livery Stable Blues. And just look at some of the names we've got here. These are original compositions. Tiger Rag.
Right.
Has there ever been a Dixieland band that has not featured Tiger Rag in its repertoire? Fidgety Feet. Clarinet Marmalade at the Jazz Band Ball, which was later a very important song for Bix Beiderbecke. And the number we're going to hear, which I'll tell you about in just a moment, but I should just say that in addition to American success, the original Dixieland Jazz Band did come to London, and that was just after the war. Punch magazine, the humour magazine of blessed memory, obviously weren't very pleased to see them. They said something like, the original Dixieland Jazz Band has arrived in London, according to one of the newspapers. We are grateful for the warning. So we can see what they thought. But I think they might have been in the minority, because the Odd Job appeared at the Hippodrome in a review there, review with a U, which was all the rage in those days. But they were very quickly taken out of it at the insistence of its star, a comedian called George Robey, who used to be billed as the Prime Minister of Mirth. Well, he wasn't very mirthful where they were concerned, and one suspects Mr. Robey felt a little bit threatened by their popularity, because it didn't do them any harm to come out of that show. They then played the Palladium, and then, get this, they did 9 months at Hammersmith Palais. So somebody must have liked them.
Absolutely.
And I think when you listen to them now, you can hear how the music had advanced over those years. We heard the Cataract Rag at the beginning of this set, which was from the first year of the war. The track we're going to play was recorded about 4 months before Armistice. And I think the clarinet of Larry Shields here is a pivotal sound. And it's also... probably for its time, it was quite outrageous, and you know, people like the editor of Punch might have said, "Oh, this is the devil's music," because that was the popular phrase, wasn't it?
Sure. Well, I mean, it was outrageous, but I guess if they'd heard what was actually going on in New Orleans, that was at the same time, they would have been even more outraged.
I think they would. So this is really just the tip of the iceberg.
Absolutely.
But a very hot iceberg.
Well, we're going to listen to the original Dixieland Jazz Band, Odd Job, as Bob Sinfield says, and they're going to play Lazy Daddy. But before that, I'd like to say thank you very much, Bob, for coming in to share your insight and enthusiasm.
Thanks very much, Julian. Great to see you again.
This is Lazy Daddy from the original Dixieland Jazz Band. The original Dixieland Jazz Band and Lazy Daddy, the band that got there first and are credited with the first jazz recording. My thanks to Bob Sinfield. And there are more World War I commemorations on Radio 3 continuing till July the 6th. In particular, Alan Shipton presents World War I, The Cradle of Jazz, next Sunday, July the 6th at 6:45 p.m. on BBC Radio 3. Well, alongside World War I and the Commonwealth Games, the other big news of the moment is the World Cup, in none other than the effervescent Brazil. With all eyes on Rio right now, I thought I'd play a new album from French string quartet Quatuor et Ben. The quartet feature percussion from Mino Chinello, a rhythm section, and several voices. Here are Stacey Kent and Marcos Valle with Jobim's Águas de Machos.
É pau, é pedra, é o fim do caminho, é um resto de toco, é um pouco sozinho, é um caco de vidro, é a vida, é o sol, é a noite, é a morte, é o laço, é o anzol, é peroba do campo,
é o nó da madeira,
caenga, candeia,
é uma tita pereira,
é madeira de vento,
tombo da ribanceira,
é um mistério profundo,
é o queira ou não queira,
é o vento ventando, é o fim da ladeira e havia vão, festa da comilheira.
É a chuva chovendo, a conversa ribeira, das águas de março é o fim da canseira.
É o pé, é o chão,
é a moça estradeira,
passarinha na mão,
pedra da tiradeira.
É uma ave no céu,
é uma ave no chão,
é um regado, uma fonte,
é um pedaço de pão.
É o fundo do poço, é o fim do caminho, no rosto eu descosto, e um pouco sozinho. É um estrepe,
é um prego,
e uma conta,
é um conto,
e um pingo,
encanto,
e uma ponta,
é um ponto,
e um peixe, um gesto,
é uma prata brilhando,
e a luz da manhã,
é o tijolo cegando,
e a lenha, é o dia, é o fim da picada, e a garrafa de cana, é o estilhaço na estrada.
É o projeto da casa, é um corpo na cama, é o carro enguiçado, é a lama, é a lama.
E um passo,
é uma ponte,
e um sapo,
é uma rã,
e um resto,
um mato,
na luz
da manhã,
são as águas de mar, sou fechando o verão, e a promessa de vida no teu coração.
Cobra é um pau, é João,
é José,
é um espinho,
na mão,
é um corte,
no pé,
são as águas de mar,
sou fechando o verão,
é
e a promessa de vida no teu coração.
É pau,
é pedra,
é o fim
do caminho,
é um resto
de toco,
é um pouco,
sozinho, é um passo, é uma ponte,
é um sapo, é uma rã,
e um belo horizonte,
é a febre terçã.
São as águas de mar, sou fechando o verão, e a promessa de vida no teu coração. É pau,
pedra,
fim,
caminho,
resto,
toco,
pouco,
sozinho,
caco,
vidro,
vida,
sol,
noite,
morte,
laço,
lençol.
São as águas de mar, sou fechando o verão, e a promessa de vida no teu coração.
Aguas de Marsos, sang by Stacey Kent and Marcos Valle, with Quator Eben from a new album simply titled Brazil, out on the Erato label. The album showcases carefully chosen pieces from Jobim, Hermeto Pascoal, Piazzolla, and Wayne Shorter, all to put you in the Brazilian mood. And Stacey Kent plays the Oxford Playhouse on the 12th of July and returns in October-November for a more extensive UK tour. Well, there's more jazz around Britain with the Cleethorpes Jazz Festival, which started yesterday, the 27th, and concludes tomorrow, the 29th of June. For those of you attending and others thinking of going tonight, you can see Tony Kofi, Alan Barnes, and Claire Teal. And tomorrow night, Robert Fowler Big Band plays Jerry Mulligan. For more information on the Cleethorpes Jazz Festival, check out the link on the Jazz Lineup page via the Radio 3 website. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Julian Joseph, on FM, online and on digital radio. Coming up next, our regular monthly feature where Kevin Legendre and I highlight a modern classic album worthy of reappraisal. Kevin, this month you've chosen Blood on the Fields from the great Wynton Marsalis. What makes this album stand out?
I think, in plain and simple terms, you have two types of Wynton, you know, small group Wynton, and then there's epic Wynton, large-scale Wynton, and this obviously falls into the latter category. I think this is his masterwork as a composer, in terms of what he's done, really with taking a concept, with actually looking at a very, very important chapter in American history, slavery, dealing with that head-on, constructing a story around that. That's a very, very important thing about this album. That's why I called it a concept album. It's really a story from start to finish with two main characters, Jesse and Leona,
yeah,
who we meet actually in the slave ship during the Middle Passage, and it's about them coming to America, being sold on plantations, and struggling to survive. So it is very, very appropriately titled. It is about blood on the field, it's about brutality, it's about people having to deal with adversity. Yet at the same time, as you hear in the music, it's also about a kind of salvation and triumph and just overcoming great odds. The music is so beautiful. On the other hand, what I think is really, really powerful about it is that it's incredibly haunting. You know, there are pieces on this record which we'll hear. It's a three-disc album. It's about 3 hours worth of music. So when I said epic, I wasn't joking. It's really, really a big piece of work. There are pieces that are utterly haunting, that I find really emotionally powerful, emotionally gripping. And I think, obviously, we know that Wynton's an incredible technician as a trumpet player and a composer, and he can do just about anything. But what he did here, which is so important, is really give you that emotional charge without cliches. You know, dealing with something as fundamental, as difficult as slavery, you know, how to actually construct a story around that and put that into notes and tones and words as well, and really make you feel something, and also stimulate you intellectually with what he's doing musically.
What are we going to hear first?
We're going to hear what I feel is one of the great tracks on this album. It's called You Don't Hear No Drums. I love the dissonance in this. I love what he's done with the horns. We have to say that the vocalists featured on this album, Cassandra Wilson, John Hendricks, and Miles Griffith, who for me is the star of the show. He's featured on this track, and it's what he does with his voice is incredible. You were singing the line just a minute ago, and we hear that main vocal line with the way that he lets his voice crack a little bit at the end of the line with all of the horns coming in around it. It's very, very powerful. You don't hear no drums.
Got no place to go. Clattering of broken bones and homes. I think you'd better ride this wave on out. Wave on out.
think you better ride this wave on out. Flashing of your head against hardwood. I think you better ride this wave on out. Silence of people joking. So I'm gonna be flying high, only I'm being mine. I've got to get, I've got to be way far away, free. To be way far away, free. You don't hear no drums, woman. I think you better ride this way.
The dramatic You Don't Hear No Drums from Wynton Marsalis's Blood on the Fields, his oratorio about slavery, featuring the vocals of Miles Griffiths, and a wonderful piano solo from
Eric Reed
there, yeah. And also an absolutely stunning trumpet solo from
Winton,
the man himself.
Yeah.
It's a stunning work. It is Winton's magnum opus. What it does is it pulls together everything that he's good at. So his ability to orchestrate not only with the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra, but his ability to orchestrate for a small group. He can put very small elements together and create something bigger and lead you into other vistas.
What is really, really important about this record is that even if you don't know anything about Negro spirituals, about that whole history of the Negro spiritual and how it relates to the blues as well, you will get it when you listen to this record.
Yeah.
You will feel what it's like to be in a church. Mm-hmm. In Black America, mm-hmm. You will feel what it's like to hear field hollers and ring shouts, you know, all of that tradition that goes far back into African American culture. It's like something very, very elemental mm-hmm. that he has in the music. And it's worth quoting what Stanley Crouch said about this. I think it's a very, very interesting observation. He said, "The improviser," referring to Winton, "had achieved his new position through absolute contact with the mud and swamp water of the earth."
Mm.
And I think that's it.
Yeah.
He's just nailed it. He's yeah. got it in one. This is about, it's the field. It's about people in the field. It's about having that contact
yeah.
with the earth and all of the hardship. And as I say, the kind of salvation that you draw from that. If you're going to survive that experience, you have to do something extraordinary, and you hear something extraordinary in the music.
Absolutely. Well, the next piece we're going to hear, it's called Lady's Lament, and the harmonic language and palette and melodic influence is very Duke Ellington and Billy Strayhorn. It's so obvious.
Yeah, I kind of associate Lady's Lament with Sophisticated Lady.
Yeah, that's
the connection for me.
Well, I mean, who wrote that?
Yeah.
You know, Duke Ellington wrote that, and that's the palette that he's using, and you hear it.
The thing that I love about this tune as well, if you listen around about the 3-minute mark, you have that piano figure, which is very eerie, and mm-hmm. what does he use? You know, one of the most simple, but one of the most vital techniques that any musician can use, hand claps.
Yeah.
Which, when I saw him perform Blood on the Fields mm-hmm. At the Barbican in 1997, that was something that really, really struck the audience when the musicians were doing the hand claps.
Mm-hmm.
I think several of them were playing tambourines as well as Herlin Riley. And I think the use of those very simple sounds, the hand claps, the tambourines, which again from a political point of view is really important before the slaves had access to instruments. You know, what did they use? Well, they used their hands and they used animal jawbones. They used old discarded objects that they could find before there was any instrument that actually came their way. There's an enormous symbolism in this, using those very sharp hand claps, which also, funnily, reminds me of Motown. If you think of those early Motown records where they use those great hand claps mm. as well, and that also, atmosphere.
Also the placement of those hand claps, because they depict a 9-4 groove. This pervades all the way through the piece. There are pieces in odd time, shifting time signatures, and you don't feel that it's about complexity. The groove is so natural yeah. that you would never think that it was in a time signature that wouldn't be, you know.
There's a quality of dance on this album, which might seem to be the antithesis of the subject, but it's I don't think it is.
If it grooves, it doesn't matter what time signature it's in.
Mm.
And if it grooves, you want to dance to it. And I think, you know, that's something that you really look for when you're creating music that has that sense of Africanness, African Americans, to qualify and to quantify certain emotional pieces of music. The groove has to be there, otherwise it doesn't pass muster. It won't even get on the plate, you know. And it's not only that, he's dealing with beyond the groove. In fact, he's alternating, and this is really interesting, isn't it? He's not sticking just with it being in tempo for you to feel that groove. He breaks it apart. It's like he sets up a shell and then he breaks it, and then he sets it up again and then he breaks it. It keeps you interested and it keeps the tension and the drama happening.
The other thing that he does throughout the record, and you can hear it on this tune as well, which is very important, is that he actually reprises You Don't Hear No Drums.
That's right.
So there's an episodic quality to this record where certain things come back. They come back at you, like these little motifs, these little flashes. It's like, okay, you heard something earlier which was important. Now it's going to come back in a different form. He's kind of reharmonized the reference to that line that we were singing earlier.
Yeah.
But it just it gives the story, and it gives the whole sound canvas this kind of circular quality as well, which is very important.
Well, it like you said before, it's sophisticated. It's architectural. And these motifs come back and back. You know, I think I better ride this wave on out. That's one of the motifs that comes back with different words. Mm. You know, he says, I think I better leave this slave right here. And all the way through, there are important figures that, when brought back, it strengthens the line of the work, you know, as it's developing and as it's going through. Because, like you said, it's an epic piece. Yep. 3 hours. Yep.
It's the rhythm and the reinforcement.
Well, let's have a listen to the music. This is Ladies' Lament featuring the voice of Cassandra Wilson.
14 years of bondage has passed. And in the day breaks, again the night falls. And then my heart breaks, again in mourning. I face the same old day. I thirst for
I think I'm gonna leave this slave behind.
Wynton Marsalis and Ladies Lament, featuring the vocals of Cassandra Wilson with the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra. A very moving piece of music. As you mentioned, these great singers, John Hendricks, a classic jazz vocalist on so many levels, as an improviser, as a textural and stylistic leader.
As a lyric writer, you know, as well.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Lambert, Hendricks, and Ross. Yeah. A really important quality in jazz vocals is the ability to improvise. And it's not just improvise melodically with in an instrumental way, but it's the ability to twist and turn and shape, reshape the melody into an emotional delivery that only comes from jazz vocalists. And Wynton has taken this palette and used it so effectively in this work.
The vocalists are outstanding, there's no doubt about that. As I say, my shout is definitely for Miles Griffiths. I mean, John Hendricks, and I refer to the concert that I saw at the Barbican on stage, he was magnificent. And there was a degree of improvisation as well that came through during the concert that we didn't have on the record. But I think the use of the vocals is very, very focused. It's really, really sharp. But also what he's done in terms of creating contrast as well between the vocals and the instrumental passages is just stunning. It's really good. I mean, the track that we're going to listen to, Chant to Call the Indians Out, for me, is the piece that best summarizes, that really captures that feeling of tension and something which is really, really full of anguish, something which is charged. You know, being in a situation where you think all hope is lost. What really struck me, there's a Mingus quality.
Yeah.
Kind of Spanish-Arabic flavour that comes in towards the end. It's like, okay, could Chiwana Moods or Cumbia and Jazz Fusion have been, could those albums have been epic suites as well? You know, if Mingus had made those into like 3.5-hour works, what would they have sounded like? And I think in terms of his historical sources, what he's allowed to permeate the work, you know, there's Mingus as well as Ellington as well.
Well, it's passed on, the feeling, the palette, the understanding. You'll see as you listen more how it opens up and you hear the influences of these great masters before.
Well, as they say, you know, the circle is unbroken.
It's unbroken. Thank you so much, Kevin, for sharing this remarkable work and acknowledging it as a modern-day masterpiece. Our last piece now is Chant to Call the Indians Out.
Whoa! Thank you.
This wounded
chant to call the Indians out from Wynton Marsalis's mammoth oratorio Blood on the Fields, a deserved recipient of the Pulitzer Prize for Music in 1997. Well, my thanks again to Kevin Legendre for joining me. And Wynton Marsalis graces the UK with his presence right now, actually, with his residency at the Barbican Centre in London. Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra International Associate Residency at the Barbican runs from Monday the 30th of June to Wednesday the 2nd of July. And what do they have in store for us? Well, Wynton and the orchestra collaborate with the Satchel Jazz Ensemble on Monday the 30th of June. There's Jazz Inspirations on Tuesday the 1st of July with Wynton in conversation with Young Jazz East Big Band. And then on the 2nd of July, on the Wednesday, the Lincoln Center Orchestra and Wynton Marsalis have special guests for a celebration of the best of Blue Note records. That's all at the Barbican Hall. And for more information on all things Wynton, check out the link on the Jazz Lineup page via the Radio 3 website. Well, that's nearly it from Jazz Lineup this week. Plenty more jazz on BBC Radio 3 with Jeffrey Smith's Jazz tonight at midnight and Jez Nelson on Monday night at 11. This week, Jez presents an exclusive studio session with the Sun Ra Orchestra, celebrating the centenary year of the band's iconic leader. On next week's Jazz Lineup, I'll be joined by saxophonist Jean Toussaint for an interview and profile of his new album, Tate Song. To sign off with tonight, Jazz Jamaica, who play this year's Glasgow Jazz Festival. The festival's been in full swing since Wednesday, the 25th of June, and runs till tomorrow night at venues across Glasgow. And if you're lucky enough to be in the area tonight, Jazz Jamaica take to the stage for a late night show at the Old Fruit Market. Jazz Lineup will be there to record the action for broadcast at a later date. So, to whet your appetite, here's Jazz Jamaica from their album Massive, and this is their very Jazz Jamaican take on Footprints. From me, Julian Joseph, till next time, bye-bye. Thank you.
Jazz Jamaica All-Stars with Footprints, ending this week's Jazz Lineup.